Okay, so let's start with the next talk. And welcome to Leonie and Mokhtar Danyaye.
Yeah, thank you very much for having us and for being here. We are part of the transnational group Alarm von Sahara, Mokhtar and me, and we're going to talk the next 25 minutes about our work and also with a special focus about pushbacks in the Saharan desert and what kind of solidarity work we as a transnational group do. But before that, I would just like to say that we are part of a bigger transnational network, which is called Afrique-Europe Interact. We as Afrique-Europe Interact, we are based in several countries in Europe, in Western and North Africa. And we fight for the right to go, but also for the right to stay, which means we're not only fighting for freedom of movement, but also for the right to stay where you want to stay. And we are like one group of this big transnational network working especially about the right to move. And yes, I think if you want to have more information about our work, we have many newspapers here in front. You can take them afterwards, or Dorette can also give them around. So you can also pick them up to get some information about our work at the big transnational network. But now we're going to start with Alarm von Sahara, and Mokhtar will present first who we are.
Okay. Thank you, Leonie. I want to greet everyone first and to pick some words from the former presentation. I think one of them talked about civil uprising. Very happy to be with you, but I want to feel that we are together. Usually we have a slogan, a motto. I want us together to say some words. If I say tous unis, you said nous vaincrons. Tous unis, tous unis, tous unis, la lutte, la lutte, la lutte. Thank you, comrade, because I think we need to be together. We need to continue the struggle against what is going on. Before presenting also again Alarm von Sahara, to continue with our presentators right now, finish about the criminalization. I will talk to you, or I will present Alarm von Sahara by giving the context in which Alarm von Sahara was founded. It was in the context of European policy, European Union and the state members exporting the criminalization of migration. Because usually all the cooperation between EU and the state members with the African countries, especially Niger, which is far from Europe, the cooperation is based on migration. And the thing is, on migration is not about enhancing or facilitating the mobility of people, but it's about criminalizing mobility. So the externalization of EU criminalization, this is what I want to say. So Alarm von Sahara was founded after 2015. Most of you or all of us know the so-called migration crisis in 2015. So from that period, EU started reinforcing its cooperation on migration with the African countries. So Niger was chosen in 2015 to be like the gatekeeper of EU. 2015 at the Valletta summit, EU has decided to found the country to criminalize, I will say concretely, the mobility of people. So we as social justice fighters, as human rights defenders, we think that it was not, or we can't stay without doing anything. That's the thinking of having the idea to set up Alarm von Sahara with the comrade that she already presents. So Alarm von Sahara, mainly the objectives that we set up by founding the organization is mainly three, which is sensitizing, documenting, and rescuing. sensitizing about the issue, because as I said, the cooperation with EU talking about migration is about criminalizing migration. It's about talking only the bad effect, I can say, or the bad effect of people mobility. So we wanted to sensitize people about the importance of having this freedom of movement, but also sensitizing about the consequences of the EU externalization borders in the country. Also sensitizing the migrant, as she said, or the people on the move, as she said, we don't want to encourage them to continue to take risky roads, but we don't also want to discourage them. So we sensitize them by giving them advices, because crossing the Saharan desert become very, very dangerous. Many people are dying, many people are disappearing in the desert, and the international opinion has only information about what is going on the sea. So they don't have information about what is going on before arriving to the Mediterranean Sea. So to sensitize about this issue. The second point, which is documenting, because we want to raise awareness, we want to make critics or denouncing, so we need to document. So we document the human rights violations on this road, and also trying to document the number of people that we found dead or disappearing, to document all these things that are happening from going or from coming back. Because since 2015, again, it became more and more that pushbacks are happening. Like from Algeria, many people are pushed back and left in the desert. I will come back to it later. And then thirdly, is rescue, because Alarm Phone Sahara was inspired by Alarm Phone Watch the Med, which has a rescue system by having a phone number that people can call whenever they are in distress. So we wanted to implement this system so that if people on the move, when crossing the desert, they are in distress, they can call the number so that we organize rescue mission, or we try to find help for them to save their lives. But unfortunately, the realities are a bit different. In the Saharan desert, or in desert, I would say in general, there is not too much network coverage. Like people can be in a situation or a critical situation, but they don't have coverage, they can't call. So we back it with a system of network of people, voluntary people that we call the whistleblowers, that are in different villages on the roads in the Saharan desert, that are somehow like the eyes and the ear for Alarm Phone, that sometimes they make patrol or in their daily routine, when they see people in a situation, they know how to help them first or contact the coordination so that we can organize a rescue mission. Yeah, I thought about the context, political context. This is also a kind of geographical context to see how far, like, the country Niger is from Europe. You can see, I don't know if you can see it, but it's in the middle where you have the two main road crossing. So Niger is far. Between Niger and Europe, I would say there is first the sea, and then secondly, you have countries, and then the Saharan Sea. And Niger usually, from history, is a kind of carrefour where people used to travel or to move. So regardless of this, EU pushing by financing, by helping with technical issue to restrict the mobility of people whenever they're trying to go to the north. Yeah. To finish maybe the presentation of Alarm Phone Sahara for you to see like the context in which we are. So this is some of our place, like at the right side, you can see the headquarter. This is where Alarm Phone is based, where we usually organize everything, the coordination. And as I said, it's changed from time to time, the responses. During pandemic COVID, people are stuck in the cities, so no possibility to go forward or going back, even though Algeria continue pushback. So we have many people in the cities. So with the help or with the some organization and the donation that we collect, so we organized an activity of collective kitchen, where every week we invite a group of migrants, of people on the move, to try to discuss with them and having their testimonies and also giving them advice and offer. And you can see the team of Alarm from Sahara. I think it's okay. Yeah, thank you.
So, as Magda said already, we are mainly based in Niger or in Niger, but because it's like the city, the country where you have to cross through when you want to go further north. Okay, you can also go to North Africa by crossing Mauritania and Senegal, but we observe that there are many people crossing through Niger, and this is why we have also the headquarters of Alarm von Sahara in Agadez. And we are observing since many years that there's not only people going further north, but there are also happening a lot of deportations. So I'll talk now about the deportations happening from Libya to Niger, because since I think more than half a year, but especially since the beginning of this year, we have already seen that more than 1,400 people have been deported from Libya to Niger. And here I'm just talking about people with a Niger nationality. So only residents from Niger have been deported. There's only those 1,400 people that we know about that have been deported in those lorries that you can see, and they arrive always in the Kawa Desert or in and in different desert cities there in the Kawa Desert, which is at the border from Libya and Niger. It's in the Niger part, and the people arrive. They're very exhausted, thirsty. Many have experienced violence, and they mainly come from those areas in Libya which are part of the Haftar regime. Either they have been experienced raids in the city center of any cities in Libya, or they have been forced to stay for a long time in detention centers, and then afterwards they have been deported to Niger in those lorries, and then they arrive there in the desert zone where there's nearly nothing, like the phones have been gone, no food, no water was with them, and it's very hot, you can imagine. So then they arrive there, and our comrades who are in this zone, they try with the measures we have to support them with water, some dates, local dates that are growing there, listen to them and try to support them. But at the end, you see many, many migrants living in the streets. They don't have a house. There's no center. There's one IOM center, one center from the International Organization for Migration, but it's overcrowded. So the people are really, in the middle of nothing. And and I'm just talking about the Niger nationalities, but there are also many people from other countries that are deported, but they are deported more in smaller vehicles, and they are often transported already to Agadez, so further in the middle of Niger, and also in the same, more or less same way, very exhausted. So here you can see, for example, how our comrades, those whistleblowers that Magda has mentioned, how they support the migrants. For example, here you can see they give them some dates, some water, they talk to them, and we have also created some huts where people can sit in the shadow or rest at least a bit after this exhausting travel coming back from Libya to Niger. But then, as we said, there are not only happening deportations from Libya, but also people want to go to Libya. And it's not only that they all want to come to Europe. This is really what I want to emphasize. They go to Libya to work there, or maybe they want to continue further in another North African state to work there and to come back. So circular migration is really popular and normal in this region. So then you can see the people, they try on these cars, they start in Agadez and they travel to Libya to work there or to find their destination. And it's, as Magda also said, it's very difficult to get through the desert, and there are many accidents happening. Either the car is broken, maybe the petrol is empty, maybe the water is gone, I don't know. So sometimes it happens that they're stuck, and our comrades, get attention to that, or they hear from that, and they try to rescue them, to bring them to the cities, to give them water, to fix the car, and so that they can continue. And unfortunately, Also, some people die at their while they're crossing the Saharan Desert, and we try at least to have some graves for the migrants to to identify them sometimes if it's possible, but to at least to give them to put give them some honor at the end, maybe kind of. Okay, I've spoken now about the deportation from Libya, but we're observing the deportation from Algeria many years more, and Mokhtar will talk about it a bit more.
Yeah, thank you, Leonie. As she talked about deportation from Libya, and we already thought about the documentation. Since 2015, it was going on also between Algeria and Niger. And also, as she mentioned right now, that from Libya, we're talking only about nationals, like only Nigerians deported from Libya. But from Algeria, it's both nationalities, Nigerians and all other. The consign, I will say, is just the color of the skin. Black, so you will be deported and dropped in the Saharan desert. You see how it happened, like the deportation, like usually or every week or regularly, the force security forces in Algeria do some patrols, like scatters in the cities. There are cities that they call wilaya, in the wilaya, arresting people sometimes on their field of work, sometimes in their house, or sometimes even in the market just walking. They arrest people like this and then push them in some trucks and finally deport them. You can go to, you can finally deport them in the desert of Niger. I would like to explain you a bit how this deportation is going on, but I think we have a video that will describe in which conditions and how people arriving. To have an idea of number, I will say every year since 2018, we documented more than 20,000 people deported. Last year, 2024, with the highest number of deportation, we documented almost 31,000 and some 400 people that Algeria deported during the year of 20. And this, the conditions very bad. Young children, as one thought about children, women, sometimes pregnant women, or women with babies, sometimes even 2 weeks, pushed back in the desert. And when I say push back, it means it's not to hand them to or to bring them into the country of Niger, but they set them at a special point that called point zero, where they have to walk almost 15 kilometers before they reach the first village of Niger.
Can you say it's in French, the video?
Okay, yeah, the video is in French reported, but maybe you can see or understand a bit. It's about what I thought.
Un drame humanitaire de grande ampleur, une véritable tragédie, presque dans l'indifférence totale. Pourtant, les responsabilités sont connues. Ce drame, en effet, qui se passe et se répète couramment dans cette zone de la frontière algéro-nigérienne, en plein désert, a pour responsable un pays, l'Algérie. Un pays aujourd'hui brouillé avec tous ses voisins. Un pays qui ne s'embarrasse guère du moindre respect des lois nationales et autres conventions africaines et internationales. Les victimes de cette situation de non-droit sont des milliers de ressortissants africains, dont des Nigériens. Ils racontent eux-mêmes leur calvaire fait de violences physiques, de viols et autres délestages de biens.
On m'a tapé. Nous, il y avait 10 personnes qui sont rentrées chez nous, en Algérie là-bas. Et puis aussi, quand tu es Nigérien, quand tu es un Burkinabé, on te maltraite. Il n'y a pas de négociation dedans. Moi, il y avait beaucoup de choses qui étaient là-bas, j'ai perdu là-bas. Il y avait même Aoussa qui était à côté de moi, c'est un frère. Il est disparu, je ne sais même pas qu'il est parti où.
Vous voyez ce qu'ils m'ont fait. Moi, avec mes cheveux, ils ont coupé. Les gens ont couché avec nous dans le désert là-bas. Les policiers, ce n'est pas même les gens civils. Les policiers même là. Il ne faut pas venir en Algérie. L'Algérie est maudit. C'est maudit, c'est les gens maudits.
Les Maliens, les Burkinabés, les Niger. Non, ils sont, ils sont,
y a pas y a, je sais pas comment comment vous le dire quoi. Ils sont tellement fatigués là-bas à l'air là. Les Maliens, les Burkinabés, les Nigériens, ils sont tellement fatigués là-bas.
Je leur ai montré, ils avaient une carte consulaire. Ils ont dit que le carte consulaire, que ça ne fonctionne pas. Alors c'est dans leur pays qu'ils ont pris le carte consulaire là. Ils m'ont refoulé. En me refoulant encore, comme il y a des gens dans le bus qui font des bagarres un peu, ils ont tous frappé avec des matraques. C'est pour cela que moi j'ai subi ça. On a voulu maintenant sauter pour s'échapper, parce que pour ne pas mourir dedans.
Wallahi, 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 comme il va se barrer là-bas. Quand de monde, du coup, y a monde, ouais, ouais, monde. Wallahi, c'est quoi? Bah, abonne dans les sirènes, si c'est rien, c'est on gagne tout qu'on a gardé, qu'on a gagné.
Si l'on n'y prend garde, cette véritable tragédie pourrait engendrer l'une des plus grandes crises humanitaires au monde. Il faut donc sonner l'état d'urgence avant qu'il ne soit trop tard. Nous sommes en effet face à une tragédie. La communauté internationale doit éviter qu'elle ne se transforme en catastrophe.
Yeah, you can see how people are deported from Algeria, and I give you an idea about the numbers. Almost 30,000 people in a year, like every week, hundreds, 200, 300, and you see the condition in which they are deported. And this is what's been going on almost, I said, for 8 years, because since 2015 it started continuously up to now. It's something that is continue. And you see how violently the people are treated. You see wounded, beaten, raped, because the securities, they even raped women and they sacked them. Imagine someone that leave his country because of war or just because of business, because as I mentioned, historically it was a normal mobility between West African countries and the Maghrebian countries. Almost all those people were not attended to come to Europe. Before the NATO bombed Libya, it's shown in the statistic that almost 70% of the mobility is to go to the Maghrebian country and to come back, because mostly are rural, and from the season, when there is a rainy season, they come back again. So this is what was going on, the circular migration. But from 2011-12, the NATO bombed Libya, which made it difficult for people to stay. Some start crossing the Mediterranean, and some don't know what to do. So you see how responsible is the politics. And yeah, as Alarm Phone Sahara, okay, good, good, sorry. Okay. Yeah, and as Alarm Phone Sahara, in this particular point of Asamaka, because as I said, people are left almost 15 kilometers before they reach the village. Sometimes they arrived wounded, sometimes, as I said, pregnant women in harsh condition, because the weather, if it is hot, it's extremely hot. If it is cold, it's extremely cold and windy. So we have activity with the support again of donation and also our partners like Medico International. We had a tricycle, those motorcycle that you see, that we use to drive to the point zero, like this 15 kilometer. Whenever they push back people, they left them. So with these tricycles, we go there. Those who are really weak, like the wounded people or women or child that couldn't continue the work. So we took them in kind of a tricycle and bring them to the city of Asamaka, where they can have assistance either for our organization and the other international organization that are mandated on migrants.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Briefly to introduce this video again, we thought about Algeria and Libya, and since 2022, again, from what the president presented us talk about Tunisia, the cooperation, now it become a kind of chain of deportation. Like from Tunisia it started. The same thing is doing between the Algeria, Tunisia and Algeria borders, and between Tunisia and Libya borders, meaning that from Tunisia, they push them back in the desert, either side Algeria, they arrive in Niger, either side Libya, they arrive again in Niger.
Nous sommes aujourd'hui le 4 août 2019. Depuis le 3, j'ai dit bien le 3 samedi, il y a à 10h, oui précisément à 10h, il y a des Tunisiens, des corabiers tunisiens qui sont tombés sur nous. En état à la préparation de la fête de l'indépendance de notre pays, la Côte d'Ivoire, et ils sont tombés sur nous, en train de préparer tout et tout. Ils viennent, ils nous prennent et ils nous envoient dans un désert. Voici les femmes. Cette femme, elle est enceinte. Et ils nous mettent à la frontière. Ils savent que la Libye est un pays dangereux. Ils nous jettent en Libye. Voici cette dame avec son enfant. Elle est enceinte.
Il y a 20 ans, on nous a jetés en brousse ici. Avec nos enfants, on n'a pas mangé ni rien à manger. Donnez pardon, venez à l'aide. On est là.
Nos enfants n'ont pas l'eau à boire. Pardonnez, ayez pitié de nous. On ne sait pas comment faire.
Vraiment, venez nous en aide parce qu'on a besoin de vous, s'il vous plaît. C'est vrai, c'est difficile, mais on a besoin de vous. Venez beaucoup.
Just maybe to briefly summarize what they've said, you've seen there are 36 people from Côte d'Ivoire, Ivorian coast. They have been deported in August 2019, so this is a long time ago, but this deportation practice continues and has become the last 1.5 years more systematic. And here you see those 36 people deported in the Tunisian-Libyan border zone. It's very hot there. It was very hot there. There were two women pregnant, one child, one baby with them, and they were asking, "Help us, help us." They sent the video to a Tunisian NGO to support them to find them there because they were brought somewhere where it's nearly nothing. They didn't have water, they didn't have food, so they were scared of dying at the end. And unfortunately, I think they have been found at the end. But those practices that happen regularly, and the people, they are there with nothing and can die like this in the zone. And all this practice is supported by the European Union money, funded with I don't know, cars or any kind of stuff that support those deportation practices. I think we have arrived with that at the end of our presentation. Many thanks for your attention. We would really like also to have maybe at least 15 minutes for Q&A, so we would be interested in your questions. This is, you can see here, the team of all our members in Niger, but also with us from Europe. And you can reach out to us at our email address. We are also on social media. We, as I said, Alarm von Sahara, but also Afrique Europe Interact, and you can find us there. And we also have a newsletter, which is Epps holding in his hand. So if you want to have, would like to be informed about what we, as Afrique Europe Interact, but also Alarm von Sahara do, you can sign up, and we send, I don't know, regularly every second month, some information about our work. And now we are happy to get questions from your side. Thank you.
Thank you, Leonie.
Thank you for your work. I have a quick question about repression you're facing against, as like an organization. Are you flying pretty much always under the radar, or do the agent, like the Behörden, know you? And is there any kind of backlash against the work you're doing in Niger, but also in the desert?
You mean about criminalization? Yeah, okay. Thank you for this question. Interesting, because it's changing. The context is changing. Definitely at the beginning, because as I said, it's a kind of externalization of migration, of criminalization. So the all the legal framework that Niger started in 2015 on mobility, funded by EU and technically, it's about criminalizing the chain of people that are involved in mobility, either transporters, because it becomes sudden that the people that usually transport passengers from Alger, from Agadez maybe to Alger or from Agadez to Libya, suddenly they turn to become smugglers. They used to pay tax, and then in 2015 the country set up again with the help, with the support or the financing of EU, set up a law called 2015-036. So a law that set in the country to criminalize mobility. We said it to criminalize mobility because this is practically how it is. Whenever they find, after 2015, whenever they find a car going toward the north from Agadez, the people, the passengers are brought back, the driver is arrested, and the car is seized. Between 2016 and 2023, many people were arrested, almost hundreds of drivers that are arrested in the country. And the law is so vague that you don't know at which level you are, like you can be incriminated by this law. So as we, even Alarm from Sahara and people working for the freedom of movement, we don't know at which level we can be incriminated, because supporting them may be seen as we are helping people to go in illegal ways. But concretely, we've been not incriminated by the law. But within our whistleblowers that working with us, some were arrested during this period for not really good reason. So we might assume that we are criminalized, but not openly saying that we are it. But many of our whistleblowers were arrested for a simple things, but we know that, okay, it's because of we are denouncing, so what we are doing is against the will. And again, we, as Alarm from Sahara and some other organization, we sue the state of Niger for the implementation of this law at the ECOWAS court in 2022. But suddenly, now things change, because since July 2023, there was a coup d'etat in Niger. Military took over the power, and they repeal this law. So this is what I can say for the question.
Thank you for the talk. I also wanted to follow up on this point, but also another point I hope I remember. Talking about criminalization of people who are helping, I myself come from Tunisia, and I know that lately the civil society, whoever is engaged in helping people on the move, are being criminalized, are being detained, are being harassed basically by the police. Everything that was even shown regarding Algeria now is happening in Tunisia, and basically since 2023 with the pact with the EU and Italy, this has been now a bit more also publicly, like displayed as a pride in a way, and this brings me to my second point. I don't know how many people here are from the Suwana region, Southwest Asia and North Africa, but this is definitely raising the question of also racism against black people in North Africa. And I have to mention, in Tunisia, Algeria, and all North African countries, there are black Tunisians and Algerians, and this is in a way, for me personally, it's I just cannot find a way to understand where this is coming from. But the rhetoric is becoming more and more spread. This is also pushing the civil society to be more aggressive against people, black people. So I wanted to raise this point. I don't know if, Mortal, you have more to add to this. It's a question that I ask myself. Maybe it's also time in the North African, Middle Eastern regions to actually tackle anti-black racism, because it's something that has been, in a way, always chosen not to talk about. But if you have your president who talks about sub-Saharan Africans, as if he's not African himself, I really don't understand this rhetoric, and it's embarrassing in a way.
Thank you very much. You want to say something? Or?
Thanks very much. We could have also talked a bit more about the situation in Nigeria and Tunisia, but actually this is also exactly what you spoke about now, what people report when they arrive in Azamaka or even in the Kawa Desert, racism that they experience from the beginning on. But I would also say there's also a lot of resistance by people on the move. For example, in Tunisia, I know they are, you probably know it better than me, but they are also migrants who organize themselves in the camps and because they don't have access, for example, to the hospitals and so on. So I would interpret this solidarity among the people on the move as a way of resistance, but it's, definitely a topic that we need to tackle. And I think we also network with many other groups and networks from the Maghreb countries and try to find any kind of resistance and solidarity strategies, but the conditions are harsh.
Yeah, I would also like to add on what the sister said, because you raise a really important, because it's somehow a comment, or talk about what is really going on. Actually, about racism, I would say, in the North African countries, it is a problem that were not well settled already. But now, with this EU border outsourcing on migration, it rises up again, the racism, and it's clear, as you said, it's very difficult. Even for the black Tunisians or the black Algerian. We had comrades in Tunisia, black Tunisians, that sometimes give us testimony about what she is living. And even the last 20th of June, we had an event together. Because of fearing of this operation, she stopped showing her face for protecting herself in Tunisia. So many black Tunisians are living this racism. So I think, as you said, it's a problem of that was well negotiated in the history, which was not really settled, and now it's rise up again to see the danger of the migration outsourcing. Because just take migration of human mobility on security issue. It allow elite or far right president to say what they want, because the president thought about some theory of replacement, meaning that black people are trying to replace the population of Maghrebian countries. So that's why he, I think, succeed to rise some other people to go in his way. Really, it is something that we, again, as left all, because the unity is very important to struggle against or to fight against. We are in networks, as she said, and in Tunisia, we have also a group that's still resisting. I can say the only one after the S, because mostly those who rise their voice, they are all now in jail. People are afraid to talk. When you talk about it, they put you in jail. It's very horrible. So it's very important to rise again this issue so that together we try to do something, because it's very important. It's very dangerous what's going on.
Okay, I think we have time for one last question, and then we need to come to an end. There's one question I can see. I don't know.
On a set minute.
I came a little late, so you may have covered this on some level, but addressing the outsourcing of the border to the Northern Africa by the EU, I was wondering if you could, it's just a general idea, not a specific question, but just the level of knowledge among, as far as you know, European Union governments and maybe the EU in general, of within the the politicians themselves, of the human cost of this, if they are if you see just blatant ignorance of it, or intentional ignorance, if you see voices within that are pushing back against that, basically what level of we're fine with this do you see among the European governments that have maybe certain factions have signed off on it, some of how on board, I guess, are people with this being policy?
From the question.
Yeah, so I guess how on board with how much are the European governments just widespread support of this being policy as it has been since 2015, 2016, and the laws that have come since then? Is there pushback within the European governments? Are there voices, and how much awareness generally is there of the human cost of these policies?
Don't know how I got the question, but maybe we thought about it, how much they're aware of it. And personally, I think as networks, we did a lot of, action in Belgium at the front of UNHCR also in Switzerland, and also at the EU Commission. And we also had meetings with left group parliament to raise awareness. So I will say they are very, if I got the question, they are really aware of what is going on. Practically, it's their will just to support and to give money and to give technical to repress people. And it's concrete, if I also again get the question, the evidences of how EU are supporting those countries, especially they thought firstly about this cooperation between Italy and Libya, which run recently. Recently also there is a Spain Prime Minister have a tour with the countries like Algeria, Mauritania, and Libya. And in Algeria recently, again, we find evidence because one of our comrades bring out a report that German official or German government been supporting training Algerian forces on border controlling for almost years in 2017. So it's really evident, if I got the question, how they support and they are aware of it. In the parliament,
are aware of it. Yeah.
They are aware of it, and those are even I would say some that we usually, with the support of some colleagues or comrades, try to organize meeting so that we give them more evidence from the ground of what is the effect of the EU policies, so that they can have more concrete evidence maybe to defend or to go against in the parliament.
And this is also why we're documenting those violence on our homepage, for example, about those testimonies, about those deportations that are happening, and to show how it is linked together. We are at the end. I don't know. We are also very happy to receive support by you through your donation, if you might want to, or also through your participation. We are just a small group, so we are here in the room. We are four members, Eb, Storet, Mokhtar, and me, but we are happy if we're going to grow a bit more, so you can join us, you can contact us, address us now, or even at our email address, and thanks very much for your attention and for the questions. And Eb is going around the donation box, okay.
Thank you.